From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The priest who would become Pope Francis impressed his Jesuit superiors in Argentina from early on, taking on more responsibilities, sure of himself, until it became apparent he had divided the Jesuit community and he was sent away to a kind of internal exile that lasted 2 years.
Who he is now as Pope is very much formed by the fact that he had made mistakes, he was banished, and he came to grips with that and changed.
Mark Shriver, nephew of President John F. Kennedy, head of an international lobby network for children, former Maryland state legislator, discusses his new biography of the 266th Pope. It's titled Pilgrimage, My Search for the Real Pope Francis. It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Even if you didn't know that Mark K. Shriver is president of the Save the Children Action Network, the advocacy and political arm for the Save the Children international nonprofit, you could guess from his last name that he's a son of Sergeant Shriver, who founded the Peace Corps and conceived the Great Society. And that middle initial K, that's for Kennedy. His mother was Eunice Kennedy, founder of the Special Olympics. Two of Mark's uncles, assassinated before he was old enough to know them, were the first Catholic president of the U.S. and his attorney general. Many Americans cannot imagine a family more Catholic than the Kennedys and the Shrivers. So why has Mark Shriver just published a book with the subtitle, My Search for the Real Pope Francis? Mark Shriver is on the line from Cambridge, Massachusetts to tell us about it. Welcome to On the Record, Mark.
Thank you so much for having me, Sheila. It's nice to talk to you again.
So the first word of the title of your book is pilgrimage. Pilgrimage, My Search for the Real Pope Francis. What set you off on a pilgrimage?
I had a little bit of a funk about the Catholic Church hierarchy, not the Catholic priests and nuns that I knew that were doing such great works in Baltimore, across Maryland, and really across the country, but really the hierarchy, the Curia in Rome, the scandals around the Vatican leaks, the comments about women in Islam, and obviously the sexual abuse crisis and the handling of that. And I was really taken aback. I had obviously been born and raised in a very Catholic family, went to a Jesuit high school, Georgetown Prep in Rockville, Maryland, a Jesuit college, Holy Cross up in Massachusetts. And when the first Jesuit pope got elected pope, and he went on the balcony of St. Peter's, and his first gesture was to ask the people in front of him to bless him instead of him imparting a blessing on them. When he was dressed so much more simply than his predecessor, when he was from South America and obviously was the first Jesuit pope elected, and the next day paid his hotel room's bill, and a couple of weeks later was on the ground washing the feet of young juvenile delinquents, including a Muslim girl. You know, I worked in Baltimore for 5 years with juvenile delinquents. I have been in the facilities where those kids are essentially locked up. And I wouldn't have the guts today, Sheila, to get on the ground and wash those kids' feet. This was a guy who kind of startled me, and I wanted to dig in to find out whether he could teach me how to be more joyful in my life, whether he could teach me and help reinvigorate my faith in the Catholic Church, which was strong with the example of nuns and priests, but shaken by the hierarchy.
So you set out to spend some time in Pope Francis's home country, Argentina. Whom did you talk to, and how did you figure out who to talk to?
Well, it's a crazy story. I, you know, wanted to dig in to find out from his friends and colleagues and his detractors exactly who he was. Was this guy making these gestures at the beginning of his papacy the real deal, or was he doing these gestures in order to garner positive press for the Catholic Church? And I went down to Buenos Aires. I had a layover in Miami with my brother, met a guy down there who was friends. His brother worked for the mayor of Buenos Aires. One thing led to another. I met the mayor's chief of staff, who lived in Bethesda, Maryland. I knocked on his door one day when I was running for the House of Delegates 16 years.
That was in, what, 94 you ran for the House of Delegates?
In 1994, and evidently this guy, who was then 14 years of age, and his parents, I was polite to him, and he was the mayor's chief of staff. I told him what I was trying to do, and he connected me to so many of the Pope's friends and colleagues and detractors, as I said. And he arranged all these meetings, not with the big shots, not with the president or the cabinet secretaries of the Argentine government, but the people that knew the Pope the best, that were the folks that picked up the trash, the priest who was his press secretary, the folks that really knew the Pope best and lived in the slums of Buenos Aires and who were his friends. And that's how it happened. And those are the folks that make up the story of pilgrimage. Those are the people that I think give the best insight to who the man really is.
Someone who has not visited Argentina might not realize how very Italian it is. Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, his parents were immigrants, living among a whole lot of other immigrants. How did that shape the future pope?
You're absolutely right. His grandmother, who was a profound impact on his life, was a peasant woman from Italy who stood up on a chair in a public square and denounced Mussolini, and who left the country shortly thereafter with her husband and her son, Mario, who would become Pope Francis's dad. There was a huge influx of Italians in Buenos Aires, and the city today still feels very European. And it's on the biggest river in the world. And the people of that city, Porteños is what they're called, have incredible confidence and pride in their city. And is often referred to, Buenos Aires is often referred to as the Paris of South America. So that culture, that serenity that he grew up in, of an Italian grandmother who lived literally a few houses away, in a community of mostly Italians, of Italian priests, Salesians, who were saying mass there and eating dinner at his family table. There was a great sense of peace and serenity, but I later found out, as I read a couple of notes that Pope Francis wrote just a few months ago, that he also experienced a lot of pain and sadness as a young boy. A family went bankrupt. So it makes him, I think, more relatable, more real. Here's a kid who's the child of immigrants, who had great peace and a great Catholic faith in his life, but also experienced financial problems, and who spent really his whole life living in Argentina in a very close community.
That's Mark K. Shriver, president of the Save the Children Action Network. This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the book Shriver published this week, Pilgrimage, My Search for the Real Pope Francis. So what set him on a different path?
It was his grandmother who taught him the earthy, if you will, impression of Catholicism, the veneration of the saints, the saying of the rosary, the lives of the saints. This was, as I said, a very poor woman who gave him that insight into Catholicism. And then, you know, he had an experience when he went to confession as a 16-year-old boy on his way, actually on a date, and just had a very profound feeling when he walked out of there that he was going to be a priest. He knew it. He went into to become a diocesan priest, but after almost dying, he had an infection in his lung and has had one of his lungs removed. He decided to become a Jesuit. That's the order in which he was really formed intellectually and spiritually, and had set him on the path that eventually ended him up on the balcony there at St. Peter's.
After his ordination, he was given more and more responsibilities by the Jesuits and was made provincial, in charge of all the Jesuits in Argentina in his early 30s. You spend a lot of time on what came of that, what that led to.
I think it's a great story. You know, Sheila, the book starts with the scene of him in exile, because he did assume a huge responsibility of being provincial or head of the Jesuits of both Argentina and Paraguay at the incredible young age of 36. As he later said, he was way too young. He was too authoritarian in his approach. And he committed, as he said, many sins. But at the age of 36, in a country that was just about to go into civil war, the dirty war that raged in Argentina in the late 70s and into the early 80s, you know, imagine being that age in charge of all the Jesuits, many of whom were much older than him, obviously, and a point in your country's history during a civil war So he made mistakes. He made grave mistakes. And after that experience of being provincial and then running the Jesuit formation home where they trained Jesuits, he was had clearly caused a split in the Jesuit order. There were those that loved him, and there were, frankly, those that despised him. And they sent him to Cordoba, into the interior of Argentina, where for 2 years he had really no responsibility. He was supposed to listen to confessions and take care of and bathe the older Jesuits. And the story to me is not, what's not most interesting is how he became Pope. It's fascinating. But what's interesting to me is this rapid rise to power and prestige, and then a dramatic exile where he was banished for 2 years. And then the coming back to power as bishop in 1992, but it's a different Jorge Mario Bergoglio. It's one who is much more merciful, one who is much more inclusive in his decision-making, one who was much more reliant on discernment in order to come to a decision. And who he is now as Pope is very much formed by the fact that he had made mistakes, he was banished, and he came to grips with that and changed.
We have to take a quick break here, and when we come back, I want to talk more about that different Jorge Bergoglio that you learned about. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Mark K. Shriver has just published a book, a blend of reporting and personal reflection called Pilgrimage, My Search for the Real Pope Francis. Mark, you set it up as your pilgrimage to understand Pope Francis, but much of your reporting describes his pilgrimage from a big focus on faith to more of a focus on social justice. Explain that.
Well, I think you see this tension in his life, the strong belief in God, this commitment to his faith, and the evolution of a commitment to social justice. I think he always had that, but there's the tension back and forth. Is the church a social justice entity, a social service provider, or is it a place to grow spiritually? And I think what he has determined and melded together are both of those things, that first and foremost is faith in God, and it's the interior relationship that he has with God and with Jesus Christ specifically. But he also believes that that faith calls him to these acts of hope and of love and of humility and mercy, which is not just being nicer to people, Sheila. It's not writing a bigger check to your favorite nonprofit. What he's talking about on mercy, and we've just ended the extraordinary jubilee of mercy, is he wants you to really get into the chaos and the confusion and the joys of other people's lives, to develop an intimate relationship with other people, to accompany them on their journey in life, and to do that relationship with God as well. And that when you get that level of intimacy with people, you want to help them because they're helping you as well. The poor are teaching you as you give them services and your time and attention. At the same time, they're teaching you about humility and mercy and love. So it's a two-way street. But that was, you know, an evolution for him as he was a Jesuit and then became bishop in Buenos Aires.
You write a lot about the time he spent as bishop, and I guess also after he became cardinal, spent in what's called the villas, which
the villas,
doesn't
yes,
refer to a big country house, which is what we tend to think of a villa. It's basically a slum.
It is, essentially, yes, and that's the term in Buenos Aires. And, you know, as a Jesuit, he would often encourage the seminarians, the novices, the young Jesuits, to go out and get their shoes muddied, to smell like the sheep, which means essentially to go out with the parishioners and to listen to them, to be with them, to accompany them, and to help them, and to be helped in the process. And that challenge, you know, I talked to seminarians or novices who, you know, have huge admiration for him, who live in Buenos Aires now, who told me that when the young novices would come back after a Saturday of working out in the neighborhoods and the communities, that Bergoglio, Pope Francis, would look at their shoes And if you didn't have mud on your shoes, he knew that what you really did was you went upstairs and took a nap, or you went upstairs and studied, and then walked around and came in the back entrance and tried to pull a fast one on him. He literally would look for the mud on your shoes. And that outreach, that sense of commitment to learning from the poor and being with the poor. And he's talking about the poor that are financially poor, of course, but also the poor that are poor spiritually. They may be suffering psychological or physical problems. That's what, you know, Pope Francis wants us all to go out and interact with each other on a more merciful basis. And he is such a challenge. He said in The Joy of the Gospel, which is a writing he did a couple years ago, get out of your comfort zones, leave security on the shore. And, you know, as a supposedly progressive Catholic, for me, it's a huge challenge because, you know, I like where my job takes me. I like my salary. I like the comfort and routine that I've built up. And he's saying, you know, put that aside and really live life fully. Give away that comfort, that routine, that security. And that's why he's a prophet, I think, Sheila. That's because he's challenging us. He's making us look internally to see how we're living life. From a place of joy, he's not using Catholic guilt, shaming you into doing stuff. He's saying, look, this is joyful. If you give it all away, if you reach out and develop intimate relationships with people and with God, you're going to live more joyfully. But that's a challenge. Wow. Real challenge.
There's a phrase that pops up several times in your writing, the theology of the people. And I'm not sure I completely get what that means.
Well, you know, in the late 70s, what you have is the church, you know, a decade removed from Vatican II. So there's a lot of confusion about what Vatican II really meant, people trying to understand and implement that. And it's different in Central and South America. You have a movement called Liberation Theology, which is an effort by a few folks that it was perceived as being very elitist, being elitist priests or elitist in the political structure trying to affect systemic change. And that was often seen as a revolutionary way and infiltrated by communists, depending on your perspective, and a way to overthrow the governments that were, in some cases, authoritarian or dictatorial. And that liberation theology came down and was discussed in Argentina. And Bergoglio and a number of Argentinian priests came up with and believe in this theology of the people, which is the concept that the average regular person could do and read the Gospels and the Scriptures, and they could converse and they could glean insights. It didn't have to come from the top down, and that change really comes from the bottom up. So the theology of the people is this belief that Cardinal Bergoglio and Pope Francis really believe is that change comes from the folks who pick up trash, from the folks who are trying to build housing units, from the people that are struggling to have a home and hold a full-time job, that when they get together and they read scriptures and they talk, that those insights they glean should inform the Catholic Church. So it's a bottom-up approach to life, and that is also very challenging. Look, I run a nonprofit at Save the Children Action Network. And when you read Pope Francis, he's challenging us not to get bigger, not to become more powerful, but to really stay close to people who are on the fringes and on the frontier, poor people. So, you know, I want to merge and I want a bigger budget and I want to have influence in Annapolis and in Washington, D.C. And Pope Francis is saying, don't do that. Stay close to the poor. Stay close to them. Learn from them. Be with them. Those insights you glean from them is the way to affect systemic change. So it's really turned me on my head. You know, I was a member of the state legislature and, you know, it's all about power and it's about how much money you can raise and how many votes you can get and how many times you can be on television. Pope Francis is saying that's all ridiculous. Listen and be with the people. And that's what the theology of the people is all about.
So was Bergoglio already on that journey you're describing to that understanding of the balance of faith and social justice when Argentina got caught up in what's called the Dirty War in the mid-70s, maybe even earlier to 1983? Because as you know and as you deal with in the book, there's some question about whether he and his position of authority did as much as he could to protect his people during the Dirty War.
Yes, I mean, you see that tension, before he became provincial and before the Dirty War happened, and you see it during the Dirty War. You know, there were, at that time, it's, you know, what I say in the book and talking to people that love Pope Francis who live in Argentina and those that can't stand him, they tell me, they use the word, it's so complicated and complex that even they didn't know what was going on, that the Army didn't know what the Navy was doing, and they didn't know what the police force was doing. There's so much confusion at that time, and there were a couple of Jesuits who, you know, reported up to Jorge Mario Bergoglio, Pope Francis, who wanted to go live in these communities outside of the Jesuit order where the poor were gathering together. And in some cases, there was belief that those folks were trying to foment revolution against the government. And one of the staples of the Jesuit order is that Jesuits should live together. And he wanted to keep the Jesuits living together. And that caused some consternation and a lot of hurt amongst other segments of the Jesuits society in Argentina. I think one of the important things you got to remember about Pope Francis' actions during the Dirty War is that other priests were killed, nuns were killed, people were killed, including his first boss in that science lab, who he really loved. But no Jesuit was ever killed. And I think that's an important thing. And people who tell me they don't like Pope Francis told me that he took actions that ended up saving their lives. And they didn't even know he was doing it to save their lives, but he was doing it. And they are alive today because of him, even though they were mad and angry with his actions in the 70s. And in some cases, those folks still don't like him. So could he have done more? Could he have reached out and saved more people's lives? You know, my line in the book was, it's so complicated that who am I to judge? It's his own line. I leave that decision up to, I guess, God and Pope Francis when he dies. Those guys can make that decision.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Mark K. Shriver about his new book, Pilgrimage, My Search for the Real Pope Francis. There has been some attention to whether or not you succeeded in getting Pope Francis to sit down with you for an interview. I am not going to ask you about that. Folks can read the book. But I do want to ask you about these almost secret meetings you discovered the Pope has been having.
Well, the secret meetings I think you're referencing are the meetings he has with the World Popular Movements, which is a group of about 150 people that he has asked and invited to the Vatican a couple times, and he met with in Brazil as well. And they're not really secret meetings. They just don't garner any press because the people he's bringing in are, you know, his friends like Sergio Sanchez, who collects cardboard and plastic, is a recycler, picking up essentially garbage at night on the streets of Buenos Aires, folks from Mali and all across Africa and Central and South America and Canada that are working with the slum dwellers, that are working with people that are struggling to make ends meet. When Sergio Sanchez first told me about this meeting, told me he spent 3 days with the Pope and the Cardinals in the Vatican, I thought he was, you know, crazy, honestly. And I'm like, you spent 3 days and you pick up trash and I'm sitting in his recycling plant in downtown Buenos Aires? And he said, yeah. And I went out. The Washington Post didn't write about it. The Baltimore Sun didn't. The New York Times. It wasn't on TV. It wasn't written anywhere. And I ended up finding out that Sergio was 100% right. And this was the Pope reaching out and saying to these folks that have no power, really, that are not the head of the AFL-CIO or the head of the education department for the U.S. government. These are people on the grassroots that are really poor. And he told them, look, stay together. Continue to work together. We're with you in solidarity. And the cardinals, you have to listen to these people. I mean, that's a profound message. And he meets with them. And when you read that writing, the people that are Vatican insiders and watchers will say, if you really want to know Pope Francis, go Google the World Popular Movements. And his speeches there are his longest and most passionate. And those are that's the insight to the real Pope Francis.
You really seem to have fallen in love with Pope Francis. And because of where we are at this moment, in American public life. I mean, you've just published this book. You're spending all this time explaining the lessons of mercy and humility that you feel you've picked up at a time when about half the country would say, we've just rejected humility and mercy. That's not the path America seems to have chosen.
And I think that path is not in favor right now. I think you're right that is an argument that could be made, and you see that approach being rejected in parts of Europe as well. But I don't think Pope Francis sees life in a 2-year election cycle or a 4-year election cycle. I think he sees things of planting seeds of forgiveness and mercy and faith, and they'll be watered by future generations. And he's, you know, trying to help grow seeds that were planted by, you know, predecessors, by his grandma, by, you know, your parents, my parents. So it may be out of vogue politically today, but this is a long-term vision I think he has. As far as whether I think you use the term I'm in love with him. No, I'm definitely not. I love my wife and I love my kids. I have huge respect for this guy. I think he's a prophet. I think he is challenging us all to look at how we act with each other, have a relationship with God. And I think we all long to have a relationship, meaningful relationship with our friends, our neighbors, our colleagues, even with the people we don't like, and have a relationship with God. And I think he's challenging us to really do that better. So I have huge respect for him because he's challenging me right to the core too. And he's challenging the way I look at politics and he's challenging the way I run a nonprofit. So it's great. Keeps me up at night, but I'm happy about it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the book and thank you for the conversation.
Thank you very much, Sheila. Have a great day.
Mark Shriver is president of the advocacy and political arm of the Save the Children nonprofit. It's called Save the Children Action Network. This week, he published his second book, a blend of reporting and personal reflection called Pilgrimage, My Search for the Real Pope Francis. Mark Shriver will be speaking about the new book this Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at Politics and Prose Bookstore on Connecticut Avenue in Washington, D.C. We have information at the On the Record page at wypr.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for sharing part of your morning with us. Join us again tomorrow.